Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Well, hello, and welcome to an entreating episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we have a phone interview with Sandy Hackett, one of the creative forces behind, you know, that Rat Pack musical going on that's such a hit here in Chicago. Also, we have two more reviews from Chicago critic Tom Williams, and of course, as always, your Chicago theater news. So buckle up, sit back, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, hello, and hello. Welcome to another episode of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of May 1st, 2006. Cirque du Soleil returns to Chicago after a three-year absence to present Corteo. Corteo will open on Friday, July 14th for a limited engagement at the United Center. The show is a festive parade imagined by a clown. Actors and acrobats will join one and all under the trademark blue and yellow Grand Chapiteau. Do not miss it. The non-equity Joseph Jeff Citation nominations will be announced on Monday, May 1st. Stay tuned to TalkTheaterInChicago.com for more information on the nominees. And also for a complete list, don't forget to check out TheaterInChicago.com's Theater News section. The Neo-Futurists have announced some of their new season. Jay Torrance's Roustabout, The Great Circus Trainwreck, will be running from August 24th through September 30th. Dean Evans' Drag will be going from November 2nd to December 9th. After that, Greg Allen's You Asked For It, running from January 25th through March 3rd. And then closing up with Sean Benjamin's Poker Night at the White House, running April 12th through May 19th. For more information on the Neo-Futurist season, go to neofuturist.org. The Pegasus Players have also announced their 2006-2007 season. Pantomime, directed by Jonathan Wilson, will be running from September 8th through October 22nd. The world premiere of Black Caesar by local playwright David Barr III that'll run from February 22nd through April 1st. And the long-awaited Aristophanes the Frog, with music by Stephen Sondheim, will be performed in April 27th through June 3rd in a swimming pool. For the 10th anniversary of Gayco, a special review called The Da Vinci Gay Code, 10 Years of Heresy, will be running this summer at the Theater Building Chicago. For more information, definitely check out theaterbuildingchicago.org. Thank you for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, giving you your news brief and reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Monty Python's Spamalot, a new musical lovingly ripped off from the motion picture Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Book and lyrics by Eric Idle, music by John Dupreez and Eric Idle, directed by Mike Nichols at the Cadillac Palace Theater in Chicago. Here is the review.
Mm-hmm.
Monty Python Spamalot is pure entertainment. The 2003 Tony winner for Best Musical appeals to those devoted followers of the film Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The show returns to Chicago, a tighter, smoother-flowing show whose humor runs from crude potty humor to wonderful wordplay to just plain silliness. But it is in-your-face comedy, sure to please everyone, filled with all the wacky knights of the Round Table led by their goofy King Arthur, played by the marvelously deadpan Michael Syberry, and his overworked and underlooked sidekick, Patsy, played by the terrific Chicago-based actor Jeff Dumas. Spamalot is a masterful Broadway musical containing a rich and lovingly ripped-off score, paying odes to classic Broadway musicals, together with stellar lighting, sets, and video design projections that vividly take us into the zany world in search of the Holy Grail. The trip is a hilarious treat, with toe-tapping and slick dances. Spamalot is a first-class Broadway musical that everyone from teens to seniors will enjoy. All the key elements of the classic film are in place. There is a killer rabbit. There is a much rabid silliness, the over-the-top comedy, plenty of nonsense. But the best thing about Spamalot is that mostly new score is delightful. John Dupreez and Eric Idle have churned out tuneful and funny songs that fit perfectly into the chaos around them. Included from Monty Python's is the infectious Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, which earned applause immediately with audience recognition. Several classic moments from the movie have also become songs. Any Python fan will immediately recognize the origins of I'm Not Dead Yet, Burn Her, and Run Away. But it is the new music, such as Find Your Grail, and the song that goes like this, that are most memorable to me. True to the movie, yet as a Broadway musical, Spamalot has a universal appeal with plenty of heart. We are easily taken to the bumbling Arthur and his pal Patsy and the collection of flawed knights led by Sir Robin, played by David Turner, Sir Lancelot, played by Rick Holmes, Sir Galahad, played by Bradley Dean. The stunning vocals from Pia Glenn as the Lady of the Lake add rich musical moments and some deft humor. Eric Idle's score contains a mixture of satirical pokes at classic Broadway shows like Fiddler on the Roof or Phantom of the Opera, and a few others, while offering a blend of Vegas Review and traditional Broadway showstopper numbers like I'm Not Dead Yet, the song that goes like this. The show's theme, Find Your Holy Grail, are excellent. Act 2's catchy Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, and the poke at being Jewish on Broadway with You Won't Succeed on Broadway are finely staged and dance numbers. Pia Glenn's Diva's Lament brings down the house, and the ending, Find Your Holy Grail, ends the energetic, whimsical show on an uplifting note. Spamalot is more than a Monty Python silly show. It is a slick, funny, well-sung and danced Broadway spectacle with fine production qualities and lots of heart. Spamalot is a fine show to introduce teens to the magic of the Broadway musical. My rating on the show, highly recommended. The show is Monty Python's Spamalot. It is playing at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph in Chicago. The schedule is Tuesdays at 7:30, Wednesdays at 2 and 7:30, Thursdays at 7:30, Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 2 and 8, Sundays at 2 p.m. The running time is 2 hours and 25 minutes. The ticket prices run from $38 to $85. The show has a limited run and tickets are very hard to get, so I would call the Broadway in Chicago at 312-902-1400. That's 312-902-1400. You only have till June 4th. This is Tom Williams and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. Here is my review of The Spitfire Grill. Music and book by James Valquay. Lyrics and book by Fred Alley. Directed by Timothy Gregory. Produced by Provision Theater. The Spitfire Grill is an uplifting folk musical. Provision Theater, under the direction of Timothy Gregory's top leadership, have quietly assembled an impressive body of work over the last couple of years. Their latest at the theater building, the Spitfire Grill, is a well-sung little folk operetta that tells an inspiring story of redemption and hopes and dreams of small-town America. Set in rural Wisconsin, at the Spitfire Grill, where Hannah Ferguson, the amazingly talented Iris Lieberman, runs the diner in a dying rural town. She hires parolee Percy Talbot, played by the vibrant, rich-voiced Tempe Thomas, to help her run the restaurant. The town busybody, Effie, played by the funny Mirka Gerton, tries to keep up on all the gossip, while Caleb Thorpe, played by Jeffrey Baumgartner, Hannah's nephew, is an insecure type determined to control his crumbling extended family. His lonely wife, Shelby, played by the marvelous singer Susan Maniz, comes to the rescue when Hannah breaks her leg, leaving Percy struggling to run the grill. Add Sheriff Joe, played by the golden-voiced Jared Zimmerman, who is finding his place in the world as well as eyeing Percy. This nicely written fable by James Belquay and Fred Alley contains a combination of haunting, folksy tunes sung with rich harmonies and an emotionally powerful solo ballads. You'd be hard-pressed to find a finer sung musical. Iris Lieberman's stellar stage presence, enriched with her stirring ballads and stinging humor, anchors the show. Susan Maniz, a smoothly polished song stylist, delivers several powerfully emotional songs. Tempe Thomas has that girl next door wholesomeness, excellent acting skills, and a strong voice that makes Percy the show's key character. The Spitfire Grill has a terrific book with lots of plot twists and empathetic characters. Everyone is struggling to let go of the past while they search for inspiration and personal redemption. There is an interesting plot twist where, since they can't sell the grill and Hannah wants to sell it, Percy comes up with the idea of running a raffle. Get $100 a ticket, putting ads in magazines all over the country. For $100 a ticket and an essay on why you want the Spitfire Grill, Hannah will select one to get it. Nice way of selling your business, and that's based on a true story that happened in a grill in Wisconsin. That adds a lot of humor and some interesting motivations of people. Spitfire Grill, filled with small-town angst and the wonder of living in the forested rural Wisconsin. This show unfolds as a beautifully sung show with sweet acoustical musical arrangements by Valerie Mays. The Spitfire Grill is a folksy, very human story with loads of heart. I can't remember enjoying a pretty, uplifting show as much as I enjoyed Spitfire Grill. It shows that Tim Gregory not only knows how to direct comedy and classical work, he has the Midas touch when it comes to musicals. My rating for the show, highly recommended. It's the Spitfire Grill at the Theater Building Chicago, produced by Provision Theater. The Theater Building is at 1225 West Belmont Avenue in Chicago. Tickets run $20 to $25. The schedule for Spitfire Grill is Thursday through Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 2 p.m. The running time is 2 hours with intermission. It runs through May 21st. For more information, call 773-327-5252. That's 773-327-5252. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Review Podcast. And go see a play this week. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Interview Podcast. Our special guest today is the writer and director of the tribute to Frank, Sammy, Joey, and Dean, and his name is Sandy Hackett. You might recognize that name. Hello, Sandy.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Great. You are the son of Buddy Hackett, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Wow, that automatically gives you a pedigree that tells me that whatever you're involved in, you know what you're talking about. Because you grew up with Sinatra and Sammy and Joey and Dean, right?
Absolutely. He used to babysit for me, and Sammy used to do the dishes.
But tell us about tribute to Frank, Sammy, Joey, and Dean.
What do you want to know? You saw it. What questions do you have?
Well,
besides it being an absolutely great show, it was like being in Vegas at the Sands with their act. And I'll tell you what, it was like going in a time warp.
That was the goal when I conceived it, you know, take you back to 1960 when they were doing Ocean's 11 in Vegas. And if that's what you got out of it, then we've succeeded.
Well, not only me, the audience reaction. Shows like that, I always like to read the audience, and I'll tell you, they were really into it.
Chicago audiences have been, I got to tell you, were phenomenal. And we've worked now, the show's about to enter its fifth year. And we've been in a lot of places, and we've had great response everywhere. But I got to say, in particular, the Chicago audiences have really been outstanding.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I think we're pretty tolerant audiences.
And I don't know if they like us that much or just happy to come in from the cold.
But they loved it. You know why? How can you not? If you have people that can do Frank Sinatra, very similar to Frank Sinatra, and I thought David DaCosta was phenomenal. I mean, I think he has Frank down.
That's great.
You got to tell us now how you selected these guys, because all of them, Kenny Jones, who did Sammy Davis Jr., was right on, and Bobby DeMeo Jr., who plays Dean Martin, was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, Jeff Applebaum, who did Joy Bishop, he even looks like Joy Bishop.
Yeah, Jeff is terrific. We found him in San Francisco when we were auditioning, and I was looking to find some other performers because we are traveling the country with the show, and we've got several casts running, and I can't be Joey everywhere.
But you try and play Joey when you can. You move around in the different casts, is that right? The different productions?
Yeah, I do try to play him whenever I can.
Give us the feel for the design of this, because, I mean, you guys had it down to, when DaCosta's singing Frank Sinatra, he's got every gesture down, he's got the body movement. I mean, this is such a well-performed show that it just blew me away.
Well, a lot of pressure coming to Chicago. Apparently there have been some other, you know, people's ideas of maybe what a Rat Pack show should have been, but having never seen them, I only go by the other critics' accounts and people that I've talked to that have seen these things and said that, you know, they were, you know, the best one was marginal and no one put a lot of time and effort. They didn't have much of a script and the actors didn't spend much time, you know, working on their craft of recreating these guys. So we've done all that. The show's been up and running. We've worked with our actors. We've given them videotape and stuff to study. We usually find stuff that's, you know, apropos to these performers for them to study. But we do. And they go in there. We immerse them into, you know, Rat Pack school and have them study and work. And when I direct moment to moment and try to give them, you know, what is Frank thinking when he says this? You know, what is this joke about? What is this moment about? And you can go back to all the file footage, and we've got tons of it, to see these things and go, you know, there you are. There's Frank doing this song, this moment. What do you think's on his mind? Why is he doing this? And, you know, here's a little movement. And we don't try to, you know, mimic them per se, but just try to give you the approximation of, you know, Frank could have done something like that.
Yeah, well, and it comes off that way. I believe that when they did their shows, I mean, you would know better. I'm sure you saw many of these Rat Pack shows. How much of those were rehearsed, or how much of those did they come out?
The real Rat Pack shows?
Yeah, did they really just go out and have fun?
The real Rat Pack shows had a lot of spontaneity in them. It was built into the show. Joey wrote a lot of the stuff. Frank and the boys would just, you know, hang out and do the stuff. And they needed a line. They'd say, Joey, what do I say when this happens? And Joey would come up with the stuff, and they'd get a laugh, and then they'd go, okay, that's my line now.
Okay, so Joey did a lot of the writing of it.
Joey did almost all the writing.
Oh.
But, you know, he wrote for guys that were icons, so they all knew how to deliver a line and a quip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, they sure did. And I liked it, the way you organized the show, where you didn't blow us away with Sinatra right away. You kind of, you know, did that intro, which really worked with the hats and everything. I mean, that was like, to me, it was like a time warp.
Well, and it's supposed to be. The opening setup is that, you know, God has sent them back, played by my father. That's my daughter in the background, if you're listening on the podcast. And you're listening to, you know, my father, Buddy Hackett, playing God and sending them back because they're making too much ruckus up in heaven. And so, you know, in trying to create that illusion on stage, you know, you can do a smoke and we backlight them so you don't really see what they look like. It's just that there's a shadow of them. And it seems to be effective at work.
Well, to me, what made it work was, yeah, if they had walked out before they sang and you were able to see them, you say, well, they don't look necessarily like them. But what your first impression of them is the way they sing. Mm-hmm. And it's them.
Well, you know, look, if you're going to do a show with these three icons, especially Sammy, Frank, and Dean, you better find an actor that can, you know, sing. And I don't know that you can find anybody that can really sing exactly like those guys, but you got to be able to sing, because there's one thing those guys could do is sing.
Oh, yeah, especially Frank. To me, the greatest stylist of all time.
Yeah,
I mean, there's nobody better. Nobody could land the song the way he did. But I like the way you approached all of them. I had an interesting reaction, and I would like your comment on it, from a young reviewer who didn't write a review, but he saw the show. And he was saying, well, he thought it was a little condescending to the blacks, a little bit, you know, racist, a little bit sexist. And I said, no, you don't understand. Here's my comment. I want you to comment. I said, you don't understand. In 1960, that was pretty hip. I mean, performing with a black and Joan hugging him and he's your friend and all that, that was in no way condescending. But maybe on today's standard it was, but that's the way it was then. Uh-huh. And the same with some of the sexist, some of the pro-drinking bits that Dean Martin did. That was, they're act.
They did that. So he's going to we pulled some of that stuff down because everybody's so politically correct and, you know, so bent out of shape about all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's crazy because that's the era, you know. But that only was a minor reaction to kids in their 20s. Every one of us understood where it was, you know what I mean? And so I think it works rather well. You even had Kenny Jones, even had Sammy Davis's walk down. I mean,
I want these guys to study them, you know, going to try and recreate something, you know, that's, you know, at least gives you an approximation. I mean, God, those guys are so talented. Anybody do them perfect? No. But can you make somebody sit there and suspend their disbelief that they're not watching them? Yeah, that's, we tried real hard to do that.
Well, you did.
Thank you.
And it comes across. It really does. And I think the audience reaction, they loved it. And I always talk to people outside of the theater. I sometimes like to hear reaction. Or we stand outside and we hear people react when they get out. And I'll tell you, this is a show people are going to bring their friends.
We, in Chicago, just in the first month, people are coming back. I mean, this is my third time here. This is my fourth time here. Wow.
Well, you're going to have a good long run here.
Well, we certainly hope so.
It is on an open run, I would assume.
It is on an open run. And we'll just have to see what happens. There's a lot of competition in town. I took my family to see Wicked, and I saw one empty seat, so I know they're hurting.
Well, they're only sold out till I think, October of 2007. But everyone says it's New York. See, we know different. But I think there's a lot of room for a show like yours. I think you're at the right venue. I love the orchestra.
Oh, the orchestra.
I mean, it sounded like the Capitol years, Sinatra's Capitol years with Billy May. I mean, it had the same exact sound.
Well, it's the same music. We just got to play it the same.
Well, but that's not always the devil's in the details on that.
But you got some fine talent musicians in Chicago. We were able to pick up a bunch of them. And we added to them, we had guys in San Francisco that had done the show that had roots in Chicago. And they said, we hear you're going to Chicago. Can we come? And we said, sure.
Oh, that's great. That's a question. With having three casts now of this show, I assume there's three, right?
We were running four. Okay. At the moment, we're running two. And we're back to going to three. It differs. We've got a bunch of people under contract. And we just closed San Francisco after we went there for 5 weeks and stayed for 9 months. And we just closed in San Francisco, but now we're going to Boston. We've got days in Dallas, Memphis, Kansas City, Dayton, Ohio, and a 4-month run in Detroit, which will be our second time back there.
Oh, great. Now, let me ask you this. Do you rotate the casts?
Yeah, we do. What we've done is we've trained everybody with all the different people. So, if we say, hey, we're going to such a city, well, you know, guys will go, oh, you know, I got family there, or I got friends, or I'd like to go there. Then, you know, depending if there's one guy that says, you know, in one character position that says, you know, I'd like to go there, then we make an effort to send him. Because we've got four of everybody.
Oh, okay.
And so if we can accommodate those requests, we can. And if not, we'll just send, you know, we'll make producers' decisions about this is who's going.
Well, that must mean the quality of all of them is at a point where if they are that interchangeable, that speaks a lot for how well you guys have developed these, you know.
It, 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 it was a lot of training and a lot of work, and it takes a while. Even I think it takes probably several months for any cast member to kind of go there and gel with everybody else. And then when you start swapping people, you know, you have to make sure that they've worked with each other. And even when they haven't, they have to go in there and pretend that they have. But, you know, because the scripts are the same and the book is the same, the music, it's easy to, you know, for them to go in and then just, you know, acquaint themselves with the guys. But they all train together, so that they all at least have, you know, have worked with each other a few times. So if they go to a new place, then they're all together and they have the same experience.
So the show is much more than any one of the casts. Any one of the four people. Let me ask you this: the stuff that you said Joey Bishop wrote most of the original stuff. How much of it did you take from him? How much of it is your writing?
I've updated the elements of the show. We took out all the stuff that, you know, if you think that the critic that said he didn't like the jokes about Sammy, that they were racist or something like that, go back to the original Rat Pack stuff. You'll see they were brutal,
but in a loving way. But still, it came off brutal.
Yeah, came off brutal, and today's thing, you wouldn't consider that was loving way. You go, hey, that's really uncomfortable.
So you took the style. How about the setup of the jokes, that sort of Borscht Belt comic style, which a lot of us, you know, us dinosaurs, love that stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought you kept the essence of that. Was a lot of that Joey's exact stuff, or was that yours?
A lot of that's mine.
Well, you really have a sense for that kind of comedy. And, you know, I think that's coming back.
Good, then I'll be able to work a lifetime.
I think people...
Of that, I have a new website.
Do you? All right, put a plug in for it.
It's andyhackett.com. My wife made me a phenomenal website. It's probably not like any website. There's not too many out there like this.
Well, I'll have to click on it and take a look at it. That's great. You're planning on more productions of the show.
Yes, we are.
Great. And you're going to run in Chicago... Or is there any minimum time you're going to run?
I think we're there through mid-May.
Through mid-May, okay.
And we'll just, you know, have to see what happens after that. But we've got all these other cities to go to. And sometimes, you know, with everybody's schedules, you know, getting all, you know, when we do have all four shows running, you know, that's tough on the company. It's nobody can get sick. You know, there's no understudies. You know, you got to have everybody running in full force. And we just had that. We were in Chicago, San Francisco, Las Vegas. And then an Indian casino is Muckleshoot.
Where is that?
Outside of Seattle.
Oh, okay. And do all of them, you do a full run? Because I notice you're doing Tuesday through Fridays at 8 at the Royal George. Saturdays 3 and 8, Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Royal George Theater, which I think is an excellent house for a show like that.
Yeah, it plays just great.
Yeah, it's intimate, and you don't have to blast us away with the aesthetic, you know, the bad sound. The sound is terrific.
We worked hard on that sound. If we don't have the sound in the show, we have nothing. I mean, the comedy will carry it a long way, but honestly, the music, you know, people come to hear the music.
But you guys did every little detail right.
Okay.
I mean, the dress was real 60s. I don't know what they were drinking. I'll assume it's iced tea or whatever, but I mean, they had it down.
I have underwear on from the 60s.
That's great. You've played just the Joey Bishop part, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us about a little bit more about your background besides this fabulous show. What have you done over the years?
Well, again, if you go to the website, it's all there.
Okay.
We spent 6 months putting this website together. I'm a stand-up comic, writer, actor, producer, director. I've done films, done television, done stage plays. Done a lot of stand-up, toured the country, worked, you know, a 1,000 comedy clubs. Had my own comedy club in Las Vegas, in Laughlin, Nevada, in Kingman, Arizona, Los Angeles, California. And
so you took it right from your father and kept it rolling, right?
Well, he you know, he was great. I toured with him for 10 years as an opening act, and he was my best friend. He was a great teacher. This show, when I came up with the idea of the opening, I called him and said, "What should be the opening?" He said, "Why should I do that?" I said, "All right, let me call Mom."
And,
okay, you don't have to call her. I'll do it.
Well, you have him down. I mean, he was fabulous.
I got a call recently from the folks at Disney. They wanted me to do his voice for, he did Scuttle in the Little Mermaid.
and the 50th anniversary of Disneyland, that they wanted to bring the scuttle back. And so they tracked me down and they said, can you do your father? And I said, yeah, I can. And they just started laughing. And said, okay, you got the job.
that was an easy audition.
I was worried because there's some other guys out there. Shecky Green does my dad really well. Jay Moore. Gosh, I hope they don't give it to somebody else. I want to keep it in the family.
You obviously did with your talent. So is this your baby, this show, or is this just another great show? How does this stack up with some of the things you've done?
It's my baby, absolutely.
Yeah.
Joey was a family friend. I put the show together to pay tribute to him.
Joey's still alive, correct?
Joey is still alive. He's not best of health, but alive. I call him on his birthday. I talk to him a couple times a year. He's had family, cousins come up to see the show, report back, and he does a great job as you. He always calls to thank me, and I went down to visit him about 9 months ago to see how he was doing and say hello and bring him some merchandise from the show.
Well, that's great, because he's one of the icons. He opened the door for so many comics.
Absolutely.
What's the future for you and for your production company?
Well, with the production company, we're going to keep doing the tribute show. We also have a show that we do in Las Vegas called the World's Greatest Magic Show that we produce that has several world-class magicians, and we're preparing to put that on tour. I think we're hoping... It looks like we have a deal in place to shoot the Rat Pack show for a DVD, some sort of DVD, but, you know, I'll wait to see if that, you know, it's all talk until it ever happens. I've been asked to be the host of a talk show that I can't tell you what the show is, but I've been hired as the host, and we're going to shoot a pilot later this summer and hopefully debut sometime in the fall.
You don't let any grass grow under you. You like to keep busy.
I love to keep busy.
Well,
I have a brand new baby girl.
I can hear in the background.
It's a spinning image of grandpa, which when you're in what we told is cute, but if she grows up looking like him, we're in trouble.
I doubt that. If she's got those good genes.
Yeah.
I doubt that. Well, this has been great. I'll tell you, it's rare that a Vegas act comes through, because I was going to call your show a review, and the lady who's with me, who's real hip and used to go to Vegas all the time, she was squeezing my arm so hard, I thought she was going to give me a welt. She just loved the show so much. She said, you know, this is a nightclub act. This is their act brought back live.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the way I tried to describe it. I hope I did that, because that's what it is. And it's so rare you see something like that. I think one person I heard say, one idiot who didn't get said, well, you know, there wasn't really a story. All it was a Vegas act. Yeah, all it was the greatest Vegas act ever.
Right, exactly. I think nothing of giving, you know, whatever the girl's name I forgot, who just won the Academy Award playing Cash.
Yes, okay.
But she just won the Academy Award for playing, you know, someone out of history. And you go, okay, so if she gets an Academy Award, why are we not considered, you know, something on par with, you know, by bringing back somebody? We're recreating people.
Especially, you're recreating people a lot of us remember vividly. I mean, within the first few notes of the show with that backlighting and the way they came out singing, man, it was like I'm back there. It was incredible. And that's the experience everyone, I would say, over 50 had.
And we're starting to get a lot of the younger folks, too, because Michael Bublé sings these songs, American Idol is singing these songs, you know, the performers are on there doing this stuff, so it seems obvious to me that this music is appreciated, and has a shelf life that's going to be a long, long time, and why not listen to it again?
Especially when it's so funny and it's so entertaining.
Well, that's the fun thing for me, was, you know, injecting the comedy back into this, you know, contemporizing it a little bit and having some fun with it.
Yeah, and I think you accomplished that. Like you said, you had that delicate balance there, but I think it came off real well, because other than some kid who didn't get it, everyone, you know, everyone appreciates it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were a lot of people. I heard some African-American folks leaving theater saying, when it was an older man, he says, that guy's got Sammy down. He said, I saw Sammy so many times. You know, they were just loving it. So I don't know what that's worth to you, but...
Everything's worth everything.
Yeah.
That's great. That's our goal, is to recreate and to have you walk out of there going, God, that was fun. I'd go see it again, and I'd certainly send my friends.
And it was just such a relief to just, you know, go out and be entertained. I didn't have to think about the show. To me, it was a deja vu experience. because I was back there with them. And I just sat back and just, you know, singing the songs and just laughing my rear end off. I mean, what else do you want?
Not you know, that I, and if someone says, you know, it's just a nightclub act, you go, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know, but we've recreated what was.
Yeah, the greatest nightclub act. And who doesn't want to see the greatest of anything?
I agree.
You know, so keep up the great work.
Thanks so
much. And I think the young kids are discovering it. And by the way, the kid that was kind of saying a couple of those things he didn't get, I said, well, on the whole, what'd you think? Oh, it was great. Oh, I want to see it again. And I go, all right, but just understand. Don't, you know, you got to understand a show is in an era.
Mm-hmm. It's a period piece.
Yeah, and but I do think you did it with a lot of good taste.
Yeah, it's 46 years old, that show.
Wow, 46. And, well, if you might be able to run it another 40 years. What do you think?
I hope so.
Yeah, it's a
I won't be around, but I'm sure someone will be around to do it.
Well, how about your daughter? Well, we're about out of time. I really appreciate this interview, and it'll be up Monday morning on the Talk Theater Chicago site. Are you planning on coming to Chicago soon?
Yeah, I'm actually going to come back. I mean, I opened, I did the first month, and I'm coming back in a couple of weeks to do one of the weekends and train a new Joey. We found a local Joey we liked that we're going to give it a shot to.
I'd definitely like to come back and see the show when you're doing it.
I will be there the weekend right before Mother's Day. If you want to come that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I will be in the show.
Oh, all right, because I'd definitely like to meet you too. But it always, when you can see the original guy, particularly the guy that wrote, direct, put the whole deal together, I definitely would like to see that.
Well, nice to meet you.
Okay, thanks, Andy.
Thanks for the airtime.
No problem, and break a leg. Keep the show going.
All right, good luck with everything you're doing.
Thank you.
Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this entreating episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. But before I let you go, you know the drill. It's time for your Shakespeare quote of the week. The following quote has to deal with trust and comes from All's Well That Ends Well, Act 1, Scene 1. Love all, trust a few. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Remember, we have a new podcast ready for your ears every Monday. So come on back to TheaterInChicago.com and check it out. Until then, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.